This is Bronwyn Schwagert, licensed therapist and author at the Angry at the Right Things podcast. Instead of controlling our anger, we'll be looking at what causes it in the first place so we can rectify what's dysfunctional in our lives and in the world. Here we go. Welcome to Angry at the Right Things. This is Bronwyn. And
Katie.
There we go. Hey guys, I just want to, before we start, I want to just let you guys know, I haven't mentioned this before, and I think this is episode like 15 or 16. So this is my passion project, doing this podcast. And I do this because as a therapist, I see so many of my clients come to life or come back to life. A lot of them are just coming to life the first time. And it is so incredible to participate and to be a witness to people coming to life. And this project of having my podcast is my way to help people who will never be my individual clients also come back to life or come to life. And so that's my motivation. And I do spend actually a lot of money marketing this podcast because I do hire a PR firm that helps me to guest on other people's podcasts. And it is costly, but you know what actually helps it to be spread more than anything is just word of mouth by people who listen. And so I want to just enlist you guys. If you enjoy what you hear on Angry at the Right Things, I want to entreat you to help me with my endeavor to get it out. And you can do that by just three simple things that will take you all of 30 seconds. First is subscribe if you haven't already. So go to wherever you subscribe to your podcasts, find Angry at the Right Things, and then click either the little plus sign or click follow. So you get every one of these podcasts and you become a regular subscriber. While you're there, you can give me a 5-star rating. And if you do that, that will really help. I know I personally don't want to be interviewed on other people's podcasts if they don't have a lot of people giving them 5-star ratings. That's kind of like how we all really know what is a good podcast. And it really helps market people's podcasts and get the word out that it's quality. And then last, please, if you like what you hear, please share this episode with a friend or two. So just want to encourage you guys to do that. It would be so awesome if you were to do that. So today we will be talking about what I am calling life-giving boundaries.
Ah, okay. I'm feeling like I'm a listener right now because I'm a little in the dark. I don't really know what we're talking about today.
You don't know about life-saving boundaries?
No, okay. No. I mean, I know about boundaries, but I don't know about life-saving boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries are life-saving. And the reason I say that is because here's what boundaries do. They create order from chaos. They separate and they bring order and stability out of chaos and disorder.
Okay.
And you know, when we think about that, when we know where we begin and where we end, what is expected of us and what is not, what we are responsible for and what we're not, we have peace and we have stability and it gives us order, order in our minds and homeostasis in our bodies.
That sounds very good.
Yeah, I agree. It is good. And you know, do you know who the dog whisperer is? Cesar Millan?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So I can't quote him directly, but I remember him saying, I thought this was fascinating, that when the human, when the owner establishes herself as the alpha to her dog or dogs, and that takes time. It takes convincing. It takes all kinds of, you know, things that he admonishes that we do to help the dog know, hey, dog, I'm actually the alpha, not you. But over time, when that dog becomes convinced that he's not the alpha, that the owner is, it lowers their anxiety like so much. It's insane, because most people seek out him or other, you know, pet helpers, dog owners, seek him out because their dogs have so much anxiety. And the number one thing we can do actually isn't just give them a walk every day. It's establish ourselves as the alpha. So what that does is it tells the dog, hey, you're not the alpha, I am. And therefore, this is what I expect you to do. And this is what you are not expected to do.
Okay.
And that calms the dog down.
Knowing their role.
Knowing their role. Mm-hmm. Having their role delineated. Having that boundary like, oh, this is what I'm supposed to do. And this is what I'm not being asked to do. And that gives them peace.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Who doesn't want peace?
And everyone not just wants it, but we need it.
Yeah.
So, you know, trees need a stable environment to put down their roots so their roots can grow deep. We need stability. We need order in order to flourish. So that's why boundaries are life-saving. They create this order and this oasis of stability in the midst of chaos so we can thrive and we can flourish. So did that convince you?
Yeah.
Okay. There we go. So here's the thing though, Katie, as much as I can sit here and do what we call psychoed about boundaries and persuade you to have more boundaries,
right?
They're not going to stick for more than like a week or two. If I just sit here and be like, well, Katie, this is what you need to do to have better boundaries with your family or your, you know, whoever. They're not going to last, because what I have found as a therapist is if all I'm doing is psychoed and that person's now implementing boundaries in their life, that in and of itself is not sustainable.
Okay.
In order for boundaries to be sustainable at every level, mentally as well as like, you know, practically, we need to be connected with our anger. Because when we are connected to our anger, when we have a healthy relationship with our anger, boundaries are a natural fruit. They're just a natural product. And they just flow naturally from us instead of the therapist telling us or us listening to a podcast on boundaries, right?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
And I suspect this might be relevant to your experience because we've talked about boundaries. And I'm wondering if you can relate to that, where maybe you've had more, but then they weren't sustained for you.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Like today I did well. I was frustrated with my daughter. I was waiting for her and she was taking a really long time to get ready. We were going to go somewhere to the gym, and instead of what I often do is I get really mad and I hold it inside and then I just blow up, right?
Yeah.
But today I feel like I succeeded. Like I succeeded in having a boundary with her today. I told her very calmly that I was angry. I said, I'm angry. And I, not in a, you know, just in a calm tone of voice, I just said, I'm angry. And I'm angry because you did this, this, and that. And the reason that makes me angry is because it causes this, this, and this, and I really want you to work on that. So that was a good feeling. Like I wasn't passive aggressive with her. I wasn't, you know, trying to make her feel bad for me. I just laid it out there. And that felt healthier than the way that I often handle that.
That feels good.
So if I could do that all the time, I think I would feel a lot better.
Well, I want that for you. I want that for you. And I want also for you to do that for other people who are listening so that they can do this at home. So you know how you hear that caveat that says, don't try this at home. Mm-hmm. This is actually the opposite. Try this at home.
All right.
So, but I want to say first, when we become connected to our anger, when we heal our relationship with anger, we do not become angry people. We become authentic and integrated people.
Hmm.
And we also stop being people who are chronically anxious and depressed.
Hmm.
And it sounds like, you know, today that just reinforced, you know,
it did.
Yeah.
It did.
That so, you weren't an angry person. You were a direct person. You were authentic.
Yeah.
You were principled and you probably felt less depressed or anxious.
I did.
Throughout that process. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good. Okay. So Katie's going to go first. We're going to do an exercise that I want others to take and run with for yourselves. These are things we can do for ourselves. And try this at home. So we're going to start, Katie, with you mentioned a few weeks ago when we were hanging out that sometimes it's hard to get up in the morning, that you feel like kind of oppressed even.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And that's – so we're going to start with going to Katie's symptoms. So a symptom of depression or – well, we won't even say depression. We'll just say suppressed anger because that's what it is it's hard to get out of bed. A lot of people – have a hard time getting up in the morning. And it's like something's pushing them down. It's like oppressive, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And so you also mentioned when I asked you where you felt it in your body, you said like the back of your neck, right?
Yes.
And so we're going to go to where our bodies are feeling holding that suppressed anger. And what the body is trying to communicate, like what it's trying to speak. Our bodies are always talking to us and they're talking for us because we're not putting our own feelings into words. So the body's doing the job for us. And so we feel it in certain parts of our body. And I have found that suppressed anger, when it's like in the shoulders, the upper back, or the back of the neck, that area is suppressed anger that is associated with guilt. And it has an oppressive kind of force to it.
Yeah, like carrying a burden.
Yeah, exactly.
On your shoulders, on your
back. A burden. It's, mm-hmm. Yes, it's a unnecessary.
And if a burden that you might feel, at least in my case, like you never get to put down.
Mm. Like you wouldn't even know what that would feel like.
No.
Yeah. Okay. So so that's where we're going to start. So guys, if you can relate to any of this, just go to where your body is speaking. In our guts, oftentimes that's where I found we feel shame. We feel disgust at others, hatred. And then shame, I really identify now as self-hatred, self-disgust. They're all one and the same. Mm. So shame is in our gut, and then contempt for others is in our gut. Or I won't say contempt for others, disgust at others' behavior. So we don't have to hate someone to actually just hate their behavior. Those can be two different things.
Okay.
Right. So those are some very common places we feel things. A lot of people feel in their chest, their heart area. That's usually just kind of solid anger.
Mm.
And then regret. I have found people feel regret in their gut and they feel regret in their chest. And I think the regret they feel in their gut is more associated with shame than the just regret, plain old regret that they feel in their chest. Those are just kind of where I'm noticing where feelings get stored. So Katie, you had mentioned at that time when we spoke about this, that you thought it was kind of associated with your sister and how she had written you a letter a long time ago that said something about you've never supported her, right? Is that right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you felt like that feeling in your neck was associated with her.
That's one of many things on a long list. Okay. Sure. Yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So can we just start there?
Yeah.
Okay. I want you to share as much as you feel comfortable about what your sister said about you, because I can't imagine you not being supportive. Like, you're a very, very empathic and supportive person, and you're her big sister. And so to have her, and, you know, just state that must have felt like kind of a betrayal, and
yeah,
just made you feel really angry.
Made me feel kind of negated, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me more.
Like
about
nothing I did counted for anything. Like, I didn't exist, kind of. I think that's the best way I can describe it. And it made me second guess myself. Mm-hmm. Like, am I really as awful as she's saying I am? Mm-hmm. And my rational mind said, no, that's not true. But, you know, my emotional mind said that hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and guys, I'm glad you just brought up rational mind. So a lot of us feel tension in our heads, headaches and migraines even. That is part of our body that's actually fighting the anger. Or that's, yeah. So our heads are fighting the anger in our bodies. And so we have to really tell our head, hey, head, you're great. I love you. I appreciate all the work you do. But right now I'm going to have you take a break because I really need to get in touch with the anger in my body right now. I really just need to connect with that. So I'm glad you mentioned that. So you felt dismissed by her, like you said, negated, dismissed, like invisible. Would that fit? Or
kind of. Just like as if nothing I had ever done registered or didn't, you know. It just, it's hard to just put into words, but just invalid. I guess that's what I said before, but just as if nothing I'd ever done had ever counted.
So would ignored fit or no?
Not ignored.
Like just taken for granted?
Maybe. Yeah.
Undervalued.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want you to close your eyes for a minute.
Okay.
And I want you just to sit with that you had done a lot of things that you knew you did for your sister. And in that moment, she just was like, you know what? You've never supported me at all. Mm-hmm. And you're feeling undervalued. You're feeling unrecognized, unacknowledged maybe. And I want you just to tell me, as you just sit with that, what do you feel in your body?
I feel kind of like a swirling feeling, like in my head, kind of like like a tornado or something.
Okay.
Like just kind of like,
okay.
This.
So I want you to tell your head, you know what, rational mind, you're great, but right now I need you to take a hiatus because this is getting in the way of my healing. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to think. Thinking is not my friend right now. I need to just feel the anger in my body. I just need to feel the anger at being negated, at being unrecognized and unacknowledged by my sister. Okay.
Okay.
And then tell me if you feel anything.
I sort of feel this feeling of like being bound, kind of like having my arms like bound, like being contained, like like powerless, maybe
constrained.
Okay. Yeah.
And okay,
like not allowed to be myself.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you feel? Do you feel something around your arms, like kind of pushing them in?
Yeah.
And what do your arms want to do right now?
just not be bound, be free.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you feel anything else in your body?
No, I think that's it.
Okay. So I want you just to feel your arms. Just focus on those arms right now. They're feeling like, are they resisting? What are they doing? Are they succumbing to it? Are they actively resisting it? Are they just feeling hopeless by the constraint?
They were feeling like that, but now they feel not like, okay, like that's not my reality. Like I don't have to be in that place.
And they don't have to be constrained.
Yeah.
Okay. So what do you feel in your arms now?
Good.
They feel better?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you feel anything else in your body when you think about your sister not acknowledging you at all? Like acting like you've never really done anything when that couldn't be further from the truth?
Maybe in my throat. Mm-hmm. Like part of me feels like I should have, feels like defending myself, like speaking up for myself. Okay. Like I'm, like I should have or should say, you know, that's just not true.
Okay. So I want you to let your throat say whatever it wants to say in fantasy. That means raw and uncensored. Yeah. Really got to go with it here.
Okay.
If your throat is feeling angry, I want you to give your throat a chance to voice that anger. What does it want to say in fantasy to your sister who is saying that you have never supported her?
It just wants to say that's not true. Okay. I have been there for you many times, and I know I haven't been there for you all the times that you needed me. Mm-hmm. And I'm sorry for that, but it really hurts me that you could say that about me.
Okay. Well, I'm gonna borrow the voice of your throat right now, and I'm gonna say it a little bit differently. Okay. And you can let me know if it fits or not.
Okay.
But I think Katie Spirit wants to say, you know what, sister? Fuck you. You know what? I have supported you, and it's not actually my job to support you 100% of the time. I'm your sister, not your mother. And I don't even always agree with you. So I've done a great job, and you don't get to manipulate the facts and try to guilt trip me right now when I know I have done exactly or close to exactly what has been good. And I know that. And I think you do too. And it makes me really angry when you manipulate and you try to guilt trip me. I'm your sister, not your mother. Fuck you.
That was good.
How does your throat feel now?
It feels good.
It feels good?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so let's do a whole body scan right now.
Okay.
How do your arms feel? Tell me if there's anything in your body at all when you think about what your sister said about you, who you are, your identity as a sister, as a person.
I feel good. I feel like I know hearing you say that felt really good. Like I know that what you said in my voice is true.
Okay.
And what her words made me feel is not true.
Yeah. It's a lie.
Yeah.
It's a lie.
It's a lie.
Yes. Okay. So you feel at peace in your body?
Yeah.
Okay.
I do.
Okay. Awesome. Okay. Well, thank you, Katie. I think that was good for now. You can open your eyes.
Okay.
So guys, that is a great example of what we can all do for ourselves. You could borrow a friend if you need to, but you know, that's just a perfect example of, you know, Katie having this suppressed anger, which morphs into guilt. Why does it morph into guilt? Because her sister wanted it to guilt her. Like that was her sister's intention. And it's manipulative and it's rooted in a distortion. It's a lie. And so what we did is we just kind of located that suppressed anger in Katie's body that's actually resisting the guilt and resisting the sister's distortion of reality. And we expressed it into words. And that is what we do. It's somatic. I guess we can call it somatic experiencing, but it's also expressive experiencing. And our bodies are speaking for us. They don't want to, though. They don't. They want us to speak for them and express the anger we feel into words in fantasy. And we can all do that. We can all do that. And you know what? I know some people are offended with curse words, but you know what? It's so therapeutic. It is so therapeutic.
It is.
It really is.
I always tell my kids, like, I don't have a problem with you swearing, but save it for when it will really be cathartic, you know?
Yes.
Like it kind of loses its value when you do it all the time. Like, but yeah.
Yes.
There's value in that for sure.
And so Katie, the more you are now connected with your anger, those boundaries are going to come more naturally for you.
Yeah.
Okay.
I see that.
And they are life-giving. And so the more you implement those boundaries, even if they're just emotional boundaries, I am not responsible for your feelings. That is going to create more stability. That is going to allow for more flourishing. So it's like this virtuous cycle. It's a good kind of cycle.
It's like it's almost like a living, breathing force field, sort of, like, you know, not a shield like that just blocks everything, but like it's a part of you, but it keeps you, like it you whole.
Right.
And
yes.
Not
yes
contaminated with yes. other people's emotional mess.
That's exactly right. So when someone wants you to feel responsible for their feelings, you're just like, ah, that's funny. And that is an oasis of peace and an oasis of stability.
It is.
It really is. So it is life-giving. I want to talk now about what I have called imprints and templates. And it all relates to what we're talking about today. So I looked up the word face in the root of what we have today for the word face. So the Proto-Indo-European root word for face is an imprint. So an imprint is like when clay is wet and then a good example actually is like, you know, when they make sidewalks and the cement is wet and, you know, most people, they write their initials in it. But if you were to just put your whole hand in it, in the wet cement, and then that cement dries, that would be what we call an impression, or your hand would be the imprint and it would leave an impression. And we could call that impression a template.
Okay.
So that's kind of how we're going to use this today. So our template in our brains that gets formed by imprinting in our very early childhood, imprinting from our parents, forms this impression that serves as a template. And that template is not, it's outside of our conscious awareness. And so because it is, it now serves like a lens through which we see the world, like it creates a paradigm for us, but we don't know it is. It's like, you know, they say, you know, looking out of rose-colored glasses.
Right.
It's like you are wearing lenses, but in this case, those lenses aren't rose-colored. They're more like dark, and you don't even know you're wearing them for your whole life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
So we're going to talk about that because these are very sneaky imprints and templates in our psyche. So this is how they're created. As children will do anything to bring about pleasure or delight or approval to the parent's face. Mm-hmm. Remember, face is related to the word imprint.
Right.
We are desperate for the light of our parents' face to shine upon us. And it shines through a smile or even like a look of delight. Ideally, a child receives the light of the parent's face consistently just for their existing, just for their existence. Not because they're doing anything, but just because they're unconditionally seen and delighted in. That's the ideal. However, unfortunately, that is extremely rare. And so the child receives, you know, more the light of the parent's face from their behavior. And whatever that behavior is, that is now associated with delighting the parent's face. And so that's an imprint that's going to serve as a template most likely throughout the rest of their lives, causing them to engage in behavior that they're like, why am I still doing this? I don't understand. Compulsive activities and behaviors.
Okay.
And so I'll give you an example. Sometimes a child receives the light of the parent's face in their first few years, but then that consistency is lost when their younger sibling is born. And at that juncture, the child now finds favor or the light from the parent's face from being a good big sister. And in other words, they learn that when they nurture a younger sibling, when they are a nurturer or just kind of responsible, they get the approval that they're looking for. They get the attention. They get the delight. And so that will form a template in which that child now associates being responsible with getting mom's approval or nurturing with getting mom's approval. And this will likely fuel this person's behavior unconsciously for the rest of her life.
Okay.
Unless she becomes aware of this template that was created, this imprint that was formed, and consciously works to unlearn it.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah.
So whatever that behavior gives the child the approval for, either mom or dad's face, it creates this imprint in our psyche that doesn't go away and will only become unlearned or undone with our conscious effort.
Okay.
And if we're not conscious of it, it will never go undone.
So how do we,
how do we do that? We're not quite there yet. I have to convince you more. So I want, So another thing I want to say, what forms this template most are early experiences of approval, but also connection, because approval is a type of connection and children desperately need connection. And so, you know, negative attention is a type of connection. And when the child isn't getting any connection, they are happy to get the negative attention because children cannot live without any attention or connection.
Hmm.
And so what forms these templates are connection, what gives them connection, and what also gives them what they feel to be abandonment. Hmm. Because children cannot live in an environment where they feel abandoned. This is what shapes us. This is what molds us permanently.
Okay.
And when children feel that connection, they feel powerful. And when they don't feel it, when they feel the abandonment, they feel powerless. So these imprints are really about what makes us feel powerful for the rest of our lives and what terrifies us, because we're going to feel powerless and that will haunt us for the rest of our lives.
Okay.
So I want to give an example. So my dad used to make me laugh a lot growing up, and we had this connection. It was intense. And you know what? It was like a lifeline for me, because if he wasn't making me laugh, he was just a monster. Mm-hmm. And my mom was kind of just always a monster. So when he made me laugh, for me, it was this powerful connection. His eyes would light up and we would have this, you know, eye contact that was intense. Like, he'd look right at me. He'd usually be making fun of my mom, so she kind of wasn't in on the joke. And it'd just be the two of us, like, having this eye contact. And it was intense. And he looked alive. His eyes looked very alive during those moments. And it made me feel alive.
Okay. So it was validating for you, do you think?
Yeah. It was like a bolt of lightning for me.
Mm.
It felt amazing. And it made me feel powerful. And it made me feel special because it was just us. So he's looking at me. It's just this one thing we share together, just him and me laughing at our mom or my mom.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt special. And remember, the word special literally means seen.
Mm. Right.
And I felt seen in that moment, and I felt powerful in that moment. And it was a contrast against so much of what I felt most of the time.
Okay. That makes sense.
It was like energizing.
Yeah.
And remember, on the other spectrum, so special means seen, and the word despised means without being seen.
Okay.
Not seen.
Right.
So kids, when they don't feel seen, they don't just feel not seen. They feel despised.
Hmm.
Right?
Rejected.
Absolutely. Yes. They feel hated. They do. So my dad made me laugh, and his eyes would come alive and I would feel alive, and it was a special connection. And I just recently started realizing how when I, you know, got a little older, like around 15, when I finally was attractive to boys, I was like a flirt addict. Like, my friends used to tease me, like, "You're such a flirt." I wasn't flirting because I wanted to have sex with these guys. I didn't even want to touch them. I just wanted that intense eye contact. Mm. I wanted to feel seen. And I had this imprint with my dad of like how good it felt. So I was like seeking that same connection. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense.
And even with like my girlfriends, I would be the one making them laugh all the time. And it was the same thing. It was, I didn't realize how I was living out this imprint. Like, I felt powerful. I felt seen when I had this intense eye contact or when I made people laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's not all bad. Of course, the flirting I do really regret. But the laughter, that's not bad, but it is good to know of, because I will say, on the other hand, if I was with my girlfriends and I wasn't talking, I felt invisible. It was a very uncomfortable experience for me not to say anything. If I was with like two or more friends and they were talking and I wasn't, It was like I wanted to crawl out of my skin. I felt invisible. I mean, I felt, I think, despised, really. I felt like completely like I didn't exist. And so it's great to make people laugh, but do I want to feel compelled? Do I want this to be a compulsive thing where I have to always be talking and always be the center of attention? No. And in fact, just now at age 53, we spent the Easter day with Steve's family, and it felt so good to like talk when I wanted to and not feel invisible when I didn't. Like, I felt very at peace the whole time.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that is a very liberating.
And that's kind of a new experience for you at these gatherings, right?
Yeah. Within the last few years. I don't have to be the center of attention. I don't even have to be part of the conversation. And I'm so happy to not. It's so lovely to have this level of peace and freedom. So I have helped to unlearn that template that was really fueling and directing my life.
Yeah.
Bossing me around.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
So along with that, just another reflection I have. So in high school, there was this boy that I was infatuated with for like a year. His name was Bill. He wasn't like objectively that attractive, but he sat in front of me, I think in French class, and his eyes were alive. And I look back, I'm like, that's why I was so into him. He would turn around and talk to me, and his eyes were so lit up. And I think I was just so attracted to that. And it's just so funny now looking back. I wouldn't have ever seen a connection between him and my dad. And now I'm like, oh my God, yeah, there is. You know, isn't that crazy?
That is crazy.
That's what I was so drawn to.
Yeah.
Right? So if we as a child or a young person, if our imprint of feeling seen, feeling special, only came from when we were sexually abused or even engaged in some kind of sexual contact with a peer that wasn't abusive, even if it were consensual, if that was the only time we felt seen, then we will most likely develop some kind of sex addiction.
Wow, that's interesting.
It will become compulsive. This is really powerful. If we only got attention as a child when we performed in some way, such as by acting in a play or in a musical or a dance, or our achievements in school or sports, we will feel compelled to do some kind of performance or achievement throughout our lives because it has now become our identity, and it's how we've learned to feel seen. But remember, it's compulsive and it's not free. And a part of us recognizes this. We know deep down, even when we're performing and we're getting that recognition, we still don't feel really seen or really known for who we really are. And it's ultimately not satisfying.
That makes sense.
All the attention we get for our achievements or our performances are not satisfying. And we feel very alone internally, actually. We feel very alone.
Is that related at all to the shadow self thing?
I think the shadow self, from what I know, is more like our darker side.
Okay. Gotcha.
But I remember as a kid, I didn't get great grades. And I remember being so impressed with the kids who always got the great grades and got the recognition. And it's so odd now because now I see those kids and I feel so sorry for them. The kids I once envied, I feel sorry for now because I see how not free they are.
Right. What's behind that?
Yes. I see it now. I used to be jealous of that. I didn't know that they were actually enslaved in a way.
Mm-hmm. That's so true.
It really is. So let's look at the flip side. How feeling abandoned by the parent or unseen also creates a lifelong imprint. So if our mother ignored us when we cried as infants, as many mothers do, unfortunately, we develop a template that informs us that our vulnerability will cause us to be abandoned. And we will never allow ourselves to show vulnerability with others.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's about what gets associated, right? Right. These associations that right. our little brains make. So along those lines, do you know that throughout history, allowing babies to, quote, cry it out was common practice recommended by doctors and society at large? It was told to mamas that if they pick up their baby when the baby's crying, it would spoil her. That was common practice until the 1960s when Dr. Spock's baby book came out and said, trust your gut, mamas, you know what to do.
Wow.
And that wasn't that long ago.
No.
And there's, you know, unfortunately, there's still people who ascribe to that even today. And so what I want to say is I actually believe that's why there is this this kind of proverbial old school people, you know, like, you know how people talk about, oh, he's old school, or old and stuck in his ways and he doesn't show emotions. Well, guess what? That's why older people tend to be like that, because they actually had moms who abandoned them when they cried as babies.
Children seen and best seen and not heard,
All that. And so the reason they will never show vulnerability is because of those imprints as young children.
That's really sad.
It's so sad. They learned that vulnerability, showing vulnerability, equals abandonment. And it's way too scary for them to risk doing.
Yeah.
So that's an example of an imprint or a template. So if our mother shamed us for getting angry or threatened to abandon us in some way, we will detach from our anger because we cannot afford to lose our primary attachment figure. We cannot afford to lose the light of her face. Our anger becomes dangerous in our little psyche, and we implicitly learn to feel guilt and to feel that we're being, air quotes, selfish when we have limits or feelings or needs. The imprint is set.
Wow.
Are you relating to that at all?
Yeah.
Is little Katie relating to that?
Yes.
Okay. So the abandonment or the threat of mom's abandonment is usually implicit, such as the look in her eyes, such as the sudden lack of eye contact altogether when her little girl is showing signs of anger. It can also show up in mom's sudden clinical tone of voice that she's using that has just lost its warmth. Or her subtle avoidance of the child. You know, the silent treatment takes a lot of manifestations.
Yeah.
Are you relating to this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Definitely.
So this is all it takes for a child to experience, to have that template created in which she dissociates from her anger. It will never be undone until she wakes up and consciously works to reverse it. But the good news is it can be undone in simply a matter of minutes in an expression exercise like I just did with Katie, or what we've also done in the past, which I call an integration exercise with little Katie, this adult Katie with little Katie.
Right.
Any thoughts on all that?
No, that's a lot to take in.
Okay. I want to know though what you're relating to. I really do want to hear that.
Okay.
About maybe the abandonment that you felt when you showed anger?
What am I relating to? I am relating to when you were saying those things, I was thinking about my mother and what she would communicate with her eyes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And this worse than any punishment would be the way that she would look at you. Like she was so disappointed.
That
is a very like
when you were angry.
Yeah. No, or just when I had done something wrong in her eyes, I guess. But just that look was like that definitely like left a imprint on me.
Okay. Yeah. So you know what? Can we go further into that right now?
Sure, sure.
Okay. Can you give me an example? So if you just made a mistake, like a normal childhood, not like you kicked the dog.
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, the biggest thing I can most I can remember was like accidentally waking her up. Like if she was tired and taking a nap and we had been loud or something, you know, or just if you had disappointed her in some way, something we'd done that she didn't like, she would just have this look on her face that was just the worst.
Disapproval.
Worst.
Oh, you know what? I'm so glad you're bringing this up because I did not have this in my notes. The look of disapproval.
Yeah.
Kids will do any that definitely creates an imprint. A lifelong imprint.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. So the look of disapproval is one of like, I can't believe you're doing this. Like, shame on you.
I'm so,
Yeah.
As if you're just so, you're so small or something, you know, like that. It just makes you feel, that look would make me feel so small.
Okay. Can we do an exercise right now?
Sure.
Okay. So I want you to close your eyes and imagine and hold the mic.
Yeah.
There we go. Imagine that you just accidentally were being too loud and woke her up, and she has that look in her eyes, that look on her face of like, I can't believe you did this, that look of absolute disapproval, and you're feeling small. And I want you to tell me what you feel in your body.
Oh, I just want to hide, I guess. Oh,
okay.
Yeah.
So
are your shoulders want to disappear? Yeah.
Your shoulders are kind of like hunched down.
Yeah.
They're kind of like, yeah. So you want to disappear. Okay.
Ashamed, I guess.
Yeah. So where do you feel that? In your shoulders? Do you feel it? Because I see it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Anywhere else?
No, just there.
Okay. Yeah. So kind of cowering, kind of cringing.
Cringing. Yes.
Okay. So I want you to tell me how old you are in this memory, what you imagine yourself to be. Do you know if you're like 7 or?
I'm trying to remember how far back I can. I have vivid memories of this as a teenager, but I'm trying to think. I'm sure that I experienced it a younger age than that.
Okay. Well, let's just say 8. Let's just say Katie's 8.
Okay.
Because, you know, a lot of people just tell me I'm 8.
Okay.
So I want you to picture little Katie. And she was really happy and lively and alive and having fun, and she was enjoying her sister. Was it that she was playing with her sister or playing with a friend? Or
I think it would just be my sister in the house. Okay. Yeah.
And now she sees this look on her mom's face, and she's 8 and she is small, but now she's feeling really small, and she's like, you can even see her kind of cowering, little Katie. Can you picture her? Okay. And I want you to imagine now adult Katie enters that memory, and you walk into that memory Mm-hmm. And mom fades into the background, and it's just you and her, and you get on her level, and you look her in the eyes, and you say, "Little Katie, I see how ashamed you feel, how guilty you feel right now, because your mom is expressing her disapproval of you. Mm-hmm. But what I need you to know is that you're doing nothing wrong. You're just a little girl doing what kids should be doing. And when I see you playing and being loud and having fun, it delights me. It is delightful to me. And I see you. And it is just so enjoyable. It is so pleasurable to watch you. And I want you to know right now that this feeling of guilt that's oppressing you, that's making you want to hide, that is a mom problem. And she is wanting you to feel responsible for her feelings. But that's because she's threatened by your joy. That's because your being alive is threatening to her. And I want you to know how sick that is. And how very, very untrue it is. And that is a mom problem, not a Katie problem. And I want you to know, little Katie, that I am here now. And I will always give you my approval. You have already won it. And there's nothing you can do to shake it. There's nothing you can do to lose my approval. And I see you, and I will never abandon you or reject you. And I will always find so much delight in watching you be alive and having fun and expressing yourself and being loud, even if that's what it takes. I will always find so much delight in that. And I will never leave you. And now you have me and we have each other and you belong to me. And I will never abandon you. And you will never feel as alone as you have felt when mom has disapproved of you or neglected you, because you have me now. And we'll never be alone, never again. And from here on out, your job is to be fully you. And all I ask is that you be true to me. That's all I ask. And we are not responsible for anyone else's feelings. And I'm going to put my arms around you right now. And I want you to know that these arms, this embrace, this is a boundary between us and everyone else. And we're only responsible for our own feelings, not for anyone else's. And now we are free to disappoint the hell out of everyone else. And I want you to give her that hug, and then you take her by the hand and you just walk her right out of that house. And you close the front door behind you and you walk with her out into the sunlight together. How are you feeling in your body right now?
I feel good. Good.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Anything else shift or?
Yeah, I just feel good. I can see that person. Me, the little Katie. Uh-huh. I can see her better, more clearly.
Oh. And how does she look? What's the look on her face now?
Good, smiling. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for doing that. I didn't expect us to do that, but yeah. I think I want to give more of these exercises to our listeners to do for themselves. And because I think these exercises bring us back to life.
Yeah,
they really do. They're really that. So that was what we call an integration exercise. The first one we did earlier was an expression, an expressive exercise. This one is an integration exercise. And as we integrate, we become whole.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have peace and boundaries become, become natural.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're going to go ahead and wrap up because I feel like we have done a lot today. And again, guys, thanks for listening. Please share this with a friend if you can, and give me that 5-star review if you think it deserves it. And I thank you. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.